Court of Appeals, live and in person as we are, November 2. We have six matters on our calendar, three of which are oral, and two which will, three would be non-oral. And we ask counsel that when you begin your comments, when you approach the podium, and you notice you have three options actually for podiums, the advantage of the middle podium is it has the light and the keep you aware of the time that you have, and plus it rises and lowers as necessary. We do ask that you identify yourself for our record and who you represent, and I'll note also that in this first case, A220826, in the trust of Eva Marie Hansen Living Trust, dated December 11, 1995, that we have two parties for respondent. Have you decided how you wish to divide your time?
Yes, Your Honor. I'm Louise Barron for respondent Linda Hansen, and I'm going to be taking the entire 15 minutes, but okay. I discussed with the clerk that we do have different briefs, myself and Mr. Kriefus, on behalf of respondent Cherry Bruins, and if in the context of my argument, the panel has questions that would be more appropriately directed to Mr. Kriefus, I would be happy to stand by and have those questions answered by him.
Very good. Okay. Sounds good. Thank you. And otherwise, counsel ready to proceed, you may approach the podium.
Thank you. Is this on? It's showing a red light. Okay, perfect. Kimberly Perkle, Your Honors, representing appellants Andrea Hansen and Aaron Hansen. May it please the court and counsel. Appellants Andrea Hansen and Aaron Hansen are seeking a reversal of the district court order as the district court erred when it ignored the express terms of Eva Marie's trust by allowing an attorney in fact under an all powers generic Minnesota statutory short form power of attorney to override the express terms of Eva Marie's trust and rewrite her estate plan. Andrea.
Before you continue, Counselor, yes. If you interrupt, I didn't see the clock was operating.
Oh.
Very good. Okay. You may continue.
Thank you, Your Honor. Andrea and Aaron Hansen request that this court reverse the district court's order finding that the 2017 restatement was valid and remand with instructions that the 2017 restatement is invalid and that the district court is to distribute Eva Marie's trust assets consistent with her 2013 restatement, which would require distribution to Eva Marie's descendants. The district court attempted to uphold the well-established law here in Minnesota with regard to trust interpretation cases, which require that the grantor's intentions control. However, the district court erred when it diverted down the path and continued an analysis beyond what the express terms of the trust were. And that got the court into the analysis under Minnesota Statute 501C0602 and Minnesota Statute 52324. This analysis rendered certain words of Eva Marie's trust meaningless. First, the district court properly cited two applicable cases, which are in the matter of the trust created under the agreement with McLaughlin and in the matter of Pamela Andrea Stisser on pages 7 and 8 of its order. The court held that where the language of the trust is not ambiguous, the intent of the settlor must be ascertained within the four corners of the trust document without resort to extrinsic evidence. The district court recognized this very important step in its order, and that is you have to determine the intent of the settlor from the plain language of the instrument. Next, the court properly found that Eva Marie's 2013 previous restatement was unambiguous, and it cited this language in its order. I, meaning Eva Marie, have the absolute right to amend or revoke my trust in whole or in part at any time, and the right to amend or revoke my trust is personal to me and may not be exercised by any legal representative or agent acting on my behalf.
Ms. Perkle, can I inquire? It seems like all the parties, including the court, felt that that language in the trust was unambiguous. And then you cited the law that all the parties are also citing to discern a settlor's intent. We are to look at the four corners of a document. So my question to you then is the precept or principle that supports your client's position the case law, or is it the statutory language of 501c0602, or are they equally come to the same result? Do we even need to get to a statute if the case law says we look at the language of the trust and just stop at that point?
Thank you for the question. You are to look at both the case law, and there is an applicable statute that was missing from this court's order. So the applicable statute is Minnesota Statute 501c0105, which actually confirms the longstanding history in this state as to how Minnesota courts embark upon a trust analysis. So to answer your question, Your Honor, you should be looking at the case law and the statute that says the trust terms control. Where the court in this case went astray is it when it diverted off that path into the analysis under Minnesota Statute 501c0602 and 523.24. We would never get to those statutes if the trust terms actually controlled.
So my question, counsel, is we have the power of attorney, which is executed subsequent to the trust.
Before the trust,
it
Your
was
Honor.
Before the trust. Okay. And I'm just curious, and I know the parties are not seizing on this language in the power of attorney, which checks box N, where the power is for all the powers that are listed and all other matters. And in your view, what's the significance of that last provision in the short form?
Thank you, Your Honor. First, not to be repetitive, but in order to get to the analysis under 523.24, we have to ignore the terms of the trust. But the path under 523.24 and the district court's analysis regarding the same is still flawed. I think you're referring to subdivision 14 under 523.24, which is the catch-all. However, this issue was briefed, but there was a specific portion of 523.24 that I believe to be controlling, and that is a limitation that an attorney in fact can only take such action which the principal can do through an agent. When read in conjunction with this trust, an agent is not allowed to amend or revoke the trust. And so under the unambiguous language of this subdivision, as well as the unambiguous language of this trust, the attorney in fact here and any other agent is expressly prohibited from amending the trust.
So the situation where hypothetically this, I mean, in reality, the settlor becomes incapacitated, at the time of the incapacitation, given the language of this trust, it could never be revoked.
If the trust states that it cannot be revoked and the terms or the right to revoke is personal to the settlor, then no.
All right. I understand.
I have a question. In your brief, you argue that the district court erred by interpreting 501c.0602 as being unambiguous. I'm curious as to, and you argue that it is ambiguous. What's the basis for that argument?
Thank you, Your Honor. Well, the definition of ambiguous as held by this court in previous cases is when reasonable minds disagree.
Well, I think, just to put a finer point on it, I think ambiguity in terms of interpreting a statute is when there are two or more reasonable interpretations. And just so I'm on the same page, understanding the statute, the provision in question is, I think, the, you know, where it says, a settlor's power with respect to revocation, amendment, or distribution of trust property may be exercised by an agent under a power of attorney only to the extent expressly authorized by the terms of the trust or the power. Is that the language that you are arguing is ambiguous?
Yes, Your Honor. So to be clear, the district court we agree that the district court properly found that the expressly adverb should be applied to both the trust portion of 0602 and the or the power portion. And the court found that on page 9 of its order, that expressly the modifier therein has to be applicable to both. Our argument, Your Honor, is that expressly based on or the power has not been met when the court moved on to the analysis in 523.24, because express by definition is particular, specific. There was no particular or explicit reference to a testator's ability to amend their trust. In fact, 523.24 is completely omits any reference to someone's estate plan, to a trust maker's trust, to a will, or to anything such as, in this case, Eva Marie's trust.
So how does that make the language in 0602 ambiguous? Because, you know, when I'm looking at page 9 and the court's conclusion of law 11 and 12, and in particular 13 at the top of page 10, it appears to me that the district court is actually agreeing with your interpretation of it. And so I think the district court basically said it's unambiguous, and I agree with appellant's interpretation of it. So, but it sounds to me that what you're arguing is that the district court may have erred in terms of its application application to 523.24?
Yes, Your Honor. We are arguing that 523.24 doesn't meet that expressly modified definition.
But that doesn't change our interpretation of the definition of 0602, though, correct?
No. Okay. There was significant argument made at the district court level about whether expressly was connected to just the terms of the trust or the power.
In other words, did it modify just the first provision, or does it modify both when you've got an or there?
That is correct, Your Honor.
And the way I read, correct me if I'm wrong, but the way I read the district court's order, particularly on page 10, is it did apply expressly to both provisions. It has to be expressly either in the trust or expressly in the power of attorney document.
That is correct.
Okay, I just want to clarify. Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome. And if I may just elaborate, again, the analysis under 0602 and 523.24 is the wrong path that the district court took, because in even moving on to that next part of the analysis, it has to render the terms of Eva Marie's trust meaningless when she held those powers to amend being personal to her.
Well, I have a question along those lines. Don't we need to look at a minimum at 0602 to see if there is an exception? Because I think, hate to use hypotheticals, but let's say that she did put in her, she put the power of attorney, and then approximately, 5 months later, she did the trust.
Correct.
And in the power of attorney, the standard short form, check the box type of general power of attorney.
Yes.
Here are the powers. But if she put in her trust that the power to amend or modify or change the trust shall be given to my power of attorney as well, that would have fit the second provision of 062, correct? Or the first provision.
Yes, that is correct. It would have fit the first provision.
Okay.
And then you'd have a scenario, Your Honor, where the trust terms and the statute comport with each other. In this case, the primary difference is that the trust explicitly precluded an agent from changing the trust.
What if, again, I hate to do hypotheticals, but I think it might help clarify. What if the power of attorney did have a provision saying in there, notwithstanding any language in the trust to the contrary, the power of attorney shall have the power to amend or modify the trust?
Your Honor, that happens quite often when an estate planning client executes a common law or general power of attorney. However, this power of attorney was the Minnesota statutory short form power of attorney, and you cannot write such words as you just described into that document and still have it be a statutory short form power of attorney.
Okay.
But it is common, Your Honor, for an estate planning a client to want someone to have the authority to amend their trust. And in fact, the Minnesota Continuing Legal Education's desk book, this question of whether you want an agent to be able to amend your trust or you want no agents to be able to amend your trust is a specific option in the drafting desk book for a revocable trust. So the fact that the option for Eva Marie was that no other agents, even though she knew she had previously executed a power of attorney document, she specifically chose that no other agent should be able to amend her trust.
Okay, thank you.
Counsel, can I bring you back to the same statute? I'm a little bit unsure about your initial answer to my question that the court deviated. It almost seems to me, since the legislature adopted the Uniform Trust statute, that you always should look at both, and it almost they might mirror each other and come up with the same result, which I think is kind of in the answer to Judge Reyes' questions from your standpoint, that is indeed the case. But I wanted to ask you in particular about the 0602 parentheses C, the settlor may revoke or amend a revocable trust. It almost seems like naturally in all these cases you would also look at that language, and in particular parentheses 2, if the terms of the trust do not provide a method or the method provided in the terms is not expressly made exclusive, then it goes into other writings, which then would lead to perhaps a power of attorney. But if I understand you correctly, consistent with the case law, common law and trust, this particular trust made an exclusive method, and that's by her and her alone. And then she added, by the way, this also means without an agent. So is that, would we not look at that statute and the court perhaps missed that particular subdivision and should have stopped at that point, consistent with what you were saying earlier?
That is correct, Your Honor. In addition to the statute that you just, and I see that I'm out of time, may I continue answering your question? Minnesota 501c0105, which is kind of the first starting out of where do we go from here in the statute. It starts by stating that certain rules, including 0602, will apply except when otherwise provided for in the trust. So that goes right back to the last thing that you just said. We look to the trust first. That's what Minnesota case law tells us we should do, and we need to follow the intentions and the express words of her trust.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And you'll have 5 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you.
Counsel for a respondent, you may approach, identify yourself, and proceed.
May it please the court, counsel, my name is Louise Barrett, and I'm here today representing respondent Linda Hansen. I'm glad that counsel for the appellant's last response brought up 501c.0105b, because that forms a large part of what the respondent argued in response to this appeal. The court has focused its questions and its comments to what the district court did, which is certainly entirely appropriate. And clearly, Ms. Hansen, as a respondent here, would urge this court to agree with that the district court properly looked at both things, both looked at the language of Eva Marie's trust, which did say what it said. Nobody is disputing that Article 4 had a provision that said the right to amend or revoke is personal to me, and that I am not giving an agent the power to do that. But again, there's a gap there, as Judge Frisch noticed, I believe it was, then that means that no one can amend or alter if Eva Marie is disabled. And the trust does include substantial provisions with regard to disabilities.
What's wrong with that, though? I mean, if the settlor ostensibly knows that it's possible at some point in time that she may become incapacitated such that she can't execute documents, that would dispose of her estate. And she chose not to execute any other documents or make a provision allowing anyone else to amend the trust. What's wrong with that?
I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but I do think that that creates a gap that I think the district court correctly found then that under the 501c.602e, the either or, the expressly in the trust or expressly in the power, to use the power of attorney.
Can you just explain to me how it creates a gap? I'm not understanding what that gap is. I mean, if the settlor intends nobody else can change my trust, that's it, I don't understand where the gap comes in.
Well, and I think, and obviously that's a good question because you asked it, but I think I'm going to give you back, I'm going to take you back to 501c.0105b, because that was kind of a large focus. It was mentioned, I think, for the first time by the appellant in the appellate brief and the amicus brief by the MSBA Trust and Probate section, spent a lot of time talking about 501c.0105b and the fact that the provision that the district court relied on to validate the 2017 restatement couldn't be applied because of 501c.0105b said that wasn't one of the things that was accepted from the language in the trust shall apply, no matter what. And so when I saw that, I thought, well, that's interesting, but there are exceptions. And as Respondent Hansen argued in her brief, there are two that I think are germane here. Because it seems to me that, and obviously we understand in making this argument that extrinsic evidence is typically not used to interpret the terms of the trust or interpret the terms of a statute. But interestingly enough, 501c.0105b has several exceptions, including an exception that allows for consideration of 501c.0412, which states that the court may modify the administrative or dispositive terms of a trust because of circumstances not anticipated by the settlor.
Right. Counsel, can I stop you there? Because you extensively briefed that, and I wasn't quite following that argument because that gives power to the court.
Correct.
But the court didn't modify the agreement here. So why is that? How is that provision even applicable here?
Well, and I think it applies for another reason, because 501c.105b subdivision 11 states that the power of the court to take such action and exercise jurisdiction as may be necessary in the interest of justice.
And so, right, but so I'm not following. The court didn't do that.
No, but I'm saying is that the trust code has essentially a safety valve that says in the interest of justice, the court, and I think that it can be this court on appeal.
How can this court on appeal? I think the district court has the power to do it. I don't think this court does. What authority would this court have to go in and blue line the trust agreement?
Well, I think, Your Honor, and as we tried to address in our brief, the issue on the absolute so-called prohibition in 501c.0105b on not going beyond the four corners of the trust document was largely made a focus on appeal here, was not made a focus at the district court level. And so our argument was that the provisions that we've cited, 501c.0412 and 501c.0105b11, were provisions that were related to and essentially sprung out of the argument that was made before the district court, which was the common law based on the four corners of the document.
I'm still not sure I'm quite following you. I guess I come back to the settlor made her intent clear in her document. She said, this is exclusive to me, to me only. No other person can exercise the power to amend this trust. That document was created after the general power of attorney. Why shouldn't courts follow that directive, that very clear and unambiguous directive from the trustee, particularly in light of 501c.0105 that says we follow the trust's intent as explicitly laid out in the document? I'm having a hard time understanding why we shouldn't do that and just reverse and remand back to the district court to implement that 203 restatement.
The answer to the question, Your Honor, is that obviously the district court was applying the 501c.602e, and the either or, the expressly in the trust or the power.
Okay, well let's go there. The first part, is it anywhere in the trust?
I agree that it is not.
Okay, so then the only issue really then is whether it's in the power of attorney.
That is the question, okay. Yes, okay. That the district court addressed.
Where in the power of attorney document does it say, notwithstanding any language in the trust that prohibits the power of attorney from amending the document, the power of attorney still has the power to amend this particular document, the 213 restatement?
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to talk over you. As the district court acknowledged, there are several provisions, and it is, you know, again, it's called a statutory short form power of attorney, and I think that that's an unfortunate misnomer, because even though it's a form document, the powers that are given to an attorney, in fact, under a statutory short form power of attorney, are quite broad and sweeping.
Right. Maybe let me rephrase my question. And I think this kind of comes back to Judge Frisch's brilliant question, as you acknowledged earlier. Why would the statutory form that's provided, why would that override somebody's express and explicit reservation of rights to amend their own trust? It seems to me that, you know, if the language is clear, we don't get into policy, but it seems like that would be a really bad policy, and the amicus brief touched on it in its, you know, well-written brief. It seems like that would, no matter what language anybody put in their trust, that short form power of attorney would override it no matter what. So you could put whatever language you have in there and it would have no effect whatsoever.
Well, I think the doomsday scenario that the amicus paints is not going to come to fruition if the court affirms. And the reason is because there are provisions within 523.24 that do expressly mention trusts and the powers of the attorney, in fact, to take any action affecting a trust. The district court cited 523.24 subdivision 7 with respect to beneficiary transactions, which states that the language conferring general authority with respect to beneficiary transactions means the principal authorizes the attorney, in fact, to represent and act for the principal in all ways and in all matters affecting any trust. And our position is that the district court appropriately found that was an express determination in the statutory short form power of attorney and the statutes that inform us as to the extent of those powers, that the statutory short form power of attorney does authorize the amendment.
I understand that's what the district court concluded, but this is an issue of law, so we look at this de novo. We don't give any deference to the district court.
Well, I understand that.
And the doomsday scenario, I'm not sure if doomsday is the right word, but it does seem like a very realistic scenario that going forward, if we were to affirm, any settler who wants to put specific language of what they do or do not want to do, it doesn't matter because that short form power of attorney is going to override it. That doesn't seem consistent with the statutes. especially 501C0105.
Well, the fact of the matter is, Your Honor, that in the statutory short form power of attorney, you can select all of the powers or any of them. You can pick and choose. You can say, I will only authorize my attorney, in fact, to conduct banking transactions or real estate transactions. But by selecting the broad all powers language, it's our position that the district court appropriately construed the statute to encompass that scenario where the broad powers include the beneficiary statute that I just read, which specifically gives the power to the attorney in fact.
Ms. Barron, can I take a step back? Because I'm having a hard time seeing how we get to the power of attorney statute. It seems like there's a number of roadblocks, one of which is the case law, of course, that appellant's counsel pointed out, the common law, and the parties don't dispute that we look at the document if it's right. Unambiguous, and everybody said it's unambiguous, mm-hmm. The trust, or the restatement, the language. That you quoted, but even as we look at 501-0602, and the amicus did spend more time, I thought, than the parties did on the parentheses C provision, which seems like we got to pass that before getting to even looking at E, and it says the settlor may revoke or amend a revocable trust, parentheses 1, by substantial compliance with the method provided in the terms. Well, that seems like a first stop, because we all said it's unambiguous and only I can... May I amend, meaning the settlor, and then under parentheses 2, if the terms of the trust do not provide a method, well, that doesn't really apply here because there is a method, but it does go on to say, or if the method provided in the terms is not expressly made exclusive. Would you agree with me that that language she had is pretty, about as exclusive as we might ever see in a trust, that it's by me and me alone and not my agent? And then that means we stop at that point. We don't even get down to parentheses E, and arguably that was an error of the court to then look at the language before we didn't need to get to that point.
I always try to agree with the judge whenever it's possible. But the fact of the matter here is that I don't think that anyone ever disputed what the Article 4 said with respect to her
ability. But I didn't see the district court address the C. Was that an error? Wouldn't you agree by that language we don't get to E?
I honestly can't say what the district court was or was not presented with respect to this issue. I was not involved in the case at that time. I know what was in the summary judgment briefing that was in the record prior to the parties' agreement to have the trial court decide the matter on the record. And I think the issue that was presented to the district court judge was the interpretation of 501C.602E. I see that my time is just about up here. I'll just say this in conclusion, Your Honor. I think the other thing that the district court pointed out here, and perhaps this is an equity thing that you're going to not want to look at because it's outside the four corners of the document, but the fact of the matter is that Mr. Kufis's client, Sherry Bruins, who was the trustee and the daughter of Eva Marie, specifically took pains to try to make sure that she did everything that she was supposed to do. And so this was not something that she did willy-nilly. I ran out and I grabbed my power of attorney and said, I can amend the trust. She received advice of counsel and did everything right. And I think that ultimately, at the end of the day, the trial court agreed that because she sought advice of counsel and because she was told by her mother's attorney that she had the right and the power to use the power of attorney document to amend the trust, to effectuate that one change to the distributive provision of the 2013 document, that for those reasons, I think that the reasoning of the district court was correct and ought to be affirmed.
Thank you, counsel. And counsel for appellant, you will now have 5 minutes.
Your Honors, respondents note that, and the judges here have confirmed that there was no motion or argument made under 501C0410 for the court to, by any interested party, which I would tell you that Linda Hansen does not meet the definition of an interested party, to bring a motion before the district court to modify the trust because circumstances had changed. That motion should have been made at the district court level. I am aware of no authority that this court would have to make a ruling on what appears to be respondent's request for the first time on appeal to modify the trust. Second, the circumstances didn't change. The power of attorney was executed prior to the amendment of the trust, and there was stipulated facts that detail that in approximately 2016, Eva Marie became aware that she could have amended her trust and changed the beneficiary from her son, Randy Hansen, to the RJH Supplemental Need Trust, and she didn't do it. So we have to go back, and to answer your last question for respondents, Your Honor, we don't, it could be 0602 subdivision C, could be 0602 subdivision E, could be 501C0105. You don't need to get there. If you follow the law that is well established here in Minnesota, it is that you don't go beyond the trust terms. They control. You keep within the four corners of the document. After all, what else could Eva Marie have done? After the provision where she says the powers are personal to me and may not be exercised by any other agent, should she have included, I really mean it, or this is what I mean, no power of attorney under these various forms can do that? I think not. I think her words were very clear. Her intentions should be followed.
To that end, counsel, you've asked us to consider a precedential opinion, and I'm wondering what the scope of the principle of law is that you're asking us to adopt. Is it that when the settlor's intent is clear and unambiguous from the four corners of the trust document, that the statutory provisions that we've been discussing today are not a relevant consideration in determining the intent of the settlor, or is there some other principle that you're asking us to consider?
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. As I noted in page 24 of our brief, we are asking the court to issue a precedential decision. And that is because we don't want there to be any confusion. There is a broad and sweeping power of attorney under the statutory short form. It does reference beneficiary transactions. It does mention the word trust. The precedential decision by this court would affirm that no matter what that statutory short form subdivision contains, in read in conjunction with someone's explicit terms of the trust, you need not even look there. The trust terms control. And I will tell this court that in addition to making it so that a grantor's intentions are followed, for practitioners in this state, if the court were not to agree with us, which I would argue they should, practitioners need to know that if you're having a client sign a trust and you're telling them and advising them that no one else can amend it, and you simultaneously on the same day have them execute a statutory short-form power of attorney document, the practitioners in the state need to be able to advise their clients that someone using that form can rewrite their estate plan. I have nothing further, Your Honors. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you to all counsel, including counsel we didn't get to hear from, but we appreciate your briefing as well on behalf of your client, and we will add your comments, answers to our questions today to our consideration and take it under advisement, issue an order within 90 days. You all have a good day. Thank you.